Welcome to the Weekly Leadership Experience, a place for leaders to get inspired, be challenged, and grow. I am your host, Rashad Oberlander. Let's get started. Today's episode of the Weekly Leadership Experience is brought to you by my 7-day Leadership Growth Challenge. It's a free challenge that I've created, and it's delivered by email over the course of 7 days. I've created 7 compelling questions to challenge various aspects of your leadership, the way you lead, and why you lead. Go to rashadoberlander.com and scroll down until you find the 7-day leadership challenge, or look for the link in the show notes. And now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Weekly Leadership Experience. Today I'm joined by Becky Morrison, lawyer turned executive coach. Becky is the founder of Grantley Coaching and the Butterfly Society, where she focuses on helping clients pursue happiness, clarity, and transform their lives. Becky believes that you must start with understanding who you are as a leader and overcoming your limiting beliefs before developing the skills, confidence, and authenticity to find your voice and a seat at the table. Becky's mission is to spread joy, and she wants to use her own experience and journey to help people supercharge their success and happiness. Becky, thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Rashad. I really appreciate it.
It's an honor. So let's kick things off with a little bit more about you. Tell us about yourself and where you're from.
Sure. So like you said, I am a full-time executive coach. I've spent a long time, about a 20-year career so far, doing all kinds of things other than coaching. I took kind of a winding road to get to this point that included a healthy dash of doing what other people thought I should do. So after a couple of years in corporate, I went to law school. Then I spent some time as a litigation associate. And then I found myself with a 2-year-old and a husband. And my husband had a really busy, demanding career in intelligence. And for the first time probably in my life at that point, I finally asked myself what it was that I needed for my career to be happy rather than just what the logical next step was. And so that was a big turning point that led to a series of career transitions that included some left turns and some pay cuts and ultimately led to spending time on the administrative side of law firms and then working in entrepreneurial finance. Which I did for a handful of years, and then effectively got laid off from that job and found myself back in this position of, what do I want to be when I grow up? What do I want to do? What do I want my life to look like? What do I need to be happy? And with the help of a coach, I landed on coaching. And I'm a coach because I really enjoy enabling the success of others, and it allows me to both have joy and spread joy, which, as you said, is my personal mission. And so now I coach full time. I work with people primarily one-on-one, and I live in the DC area outside of Washington, DC, with my husband, 2 kids, and 2 golden retrievers. And
that's me. Awesome. And I mean, there's a couple of points I love in there that you mentioned, just to hone in on, like, a healthy dose of doing what other people think you should do. And then also kind of that question of, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's sometimes funny how we just fall into things, right? And kind of end up on a path we weren't sure we wanted to be on. What was the catalyst for you in terms of shifting that? Like, where was the point that you were like, nah, this is not working? And what changed your trajectory?
So, I mean, I think it was a slow burn of a catalyst of just life being really hard and being really unhappy. But there are a couple of moments that stand out. I tell the story often of, I can still picture it, right? Being in the bathroom, giving my 2-year-old daughter a bath with the cordless phone clipped to the back of my belt and earphones in, and I'm preparing our expert witness for trial while trying to take notes and bathe a 2-year-old while not letting the people on the phone know that I'm bathing a 2-year-old. And I sort of had this moment of like, yeah, this is not sustainable in the long term. Something has to change.
Which are you telling me it doesn't look like Suits all the time?
I wish, man. Suits is awesome. I mean, it was fun. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed litigation. I enjoyed being, and I didn't get to do that many trials because I was at a big law firm. But I enjoyed even the settlement process. I enjoyed the work I was doing, but I just also really enjoyed being a parent and really enjoyed being a present parent. And the two are tough to do. It's tough to do both. I'm not saying it's impossible. I know there are a lot of really great litigators who are also great parents. But for me, doing both wasn't an option, or didn't seem like an option. And so that sort of launched this inquiry of like, okay, well, what do I want my life to look like? And what am I willing to give up in order to have what I want, right? And that, you know, it I don't want to claim that that bathtub moment was like the moment. There are other things that happened, and I write about some of that. I've got, as you know, a book coming out. I write about some of that in my book. But, you know, that kind of launched an 18-month inquiry of like, what is really going on here, and what kind of job do I want, and what kind of life do I want, and how do I make it all make sense in a way that is not about doing the next logical thing, but in a way that is about being happy and living happier.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that's it sort of lends itself, I think, well to my next question for you. And in your practice, you talk about leaders needing to understand themselves first. So can you expand on that?
Yeah. I mean, so now in the work that I do after, you know, a couple decades of managing teams and being a leader of people, I work with leaders, especially emerging leaders, to help them figure out what they need. And often they come to me and say, you know, suddenly I've got a new level of leadership that I'm being asked to do in my job. Mm-hmm. And I need to figure out how to play that role. So I need to, you know, shore up my skills and fill in my blind spots. And that is true, right? You need to grow as a leader. You need to grow your skills. You need to know where that growth needs to happen, where those blind spots sit. But first, you need to understand that leadership is not a role that you're going to play. It's not a mask or a costume that you're putting on. You are a leader. And so it's not about, hey, you know, I really look up to my mentor and I want to be a leader just like him. Maybe. But who are you as a leader first? Let's figure that out. And then let's figure out what that's going to look like and what it needs to grow into for you to take your leadership to the next level.
So, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, I think, because a lot of times you exemplify people in your life that you want to be like. And, you know, and at the same time, you probably exemplify people in your life that you don't want to be like. You know, I don't know, maybe there's people out there that maybe haven't had a bad manager. I don't know. They may be like the white unicorn, but you know, what do you say about that? Like you're really understanding yourself, but where do you find that balance in terms of you like this about that leader, you don't like that about that leader, you know, understand yourself, and where does that all tie together?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think it's all part of the consideration, right? Like I'll often sit down with somebody, say, for example, who's just gotten a seat at, you know, like the director level table of a department, and they look around the room and they say, well, Joe is really good at handling confrontation, and Sally's really good at, you know, really getting her point across concisely, and I want to be able to do those things. And then we have to break down, well, have you tried doing those things the way that those people do? And if the answer is yeah, and it felt good, then yeah, let's work on how to evolve into that skill. If the answer is yeah, I mean, I try to, you know, go in and be strong in confrontation, but I get super emotional and it feels horrible that I'm being so mean or so direct. Well, why do you want to engage in a behavior for the rest of your, you know, the next chapter of your career that feels terrible? So let's figure out what it is that you like about that behavior and find out how you can accomplish the same end with a behavior that fits for you.
Hmm. Hmm. And so what are some of the limiting beliefs leaders face, and what is the first step in overcoming them?
So I think there's two big issues, and I think we've talked about a little bit about the first one, but it's actually this belief that I need to be somebody other than myself to be a leader. That's a big one. And the second one that I want to talk about ties right into that. The reason people believe that they need to be someone else is because they have this belief that I'm not actually good enough to be a leader at this level. I mean, that's what 99% of the hesitation comes down to is a lack of confidence, or sometimes people call it imposter syndrome. This idea of I've been able to do it and I've got this far, but this new level is going to be the one where the global they finally figure out that I'm not actually that good. And so I do a lot of work around helping people who have been very successful on paper build up their confidence and overcome that sort of imposter syndrome moment, you know, really get clear. And this goes back to really get clear on their purpose, their values, their why, their communication style, their boundary setting style, so that they have all the tools that they need and they know themselves well enough to implement them and start owning the reality of their leadership. And so that's kind of how we get started. I mean, there's a lot of really tactical things that you can do to overcome that imposter syndrome moment too. But it starts with identifying that that's the real issue and then kind of taking the time to get to know what it is that you do bring to the table that is of value and then how you're going to amplify and magnify that value.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one of the things that I'm just considering in your response mm-hmm. is like identifying the limiting belief. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is maybe getting deep into the psyche of the brain, but like identify a limiting belief, but then to deal with the limiting belief, is there not like, where did the limiting belief come from? Like where do you start with that?
Well, so we do some discussion of that. You know, there's a difference between coaching and therapy, and I like to describe that difference as follows. Therapy is primarily, though not exclusively, archaeological, right? It goes back and looks at the source of the pattern of behavior to make the change. Mm-hmm. Coaching is primarily architectural. It's building system solutions, progress forward, right? Like designing the life, designing the leadership, designing the approach, designing the solution. Sometimes to build something, you need to excavate a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes in therapy, after you excavate, you need to build. And so there is that gray area and that overlap where I do find that with some of my clients, we are taking a look at where some of their patterns, where some of their limiting beliefs might come from, and whether it's possible to solve them without doing further archaeology, or whether they need to call in additional support to really get to the root cause. You know, and there are some clients who work with both therapists and coaches at the same time because they discover that, in fact, yeah, I've got a lot of emotional archaeological work that I need to do around why it is that I think I'm not good enough. And some are able to resolve that just by identifying that that's really what's going on.
For sure. I really like that analogy actually about archaeology and architecture. Really makes sense, I think, when you think about it in terms of that, you know, digging up the past versus building something for the future, which is really cool. How does this understanding yourself and overcoming one's limiting beliefs lead to what you describe as leadership presence, and why is that important?
So, I mean, I want to talk about leadership presence. In answering the question, I want to start by talking about leadership presence. So people throw around the word leadership presence a lot. And historically, that has meant, you know, do I show up and I have the presence? Am I there? Do people respect me? Do I command the room? And I think, you know, I like to say, and it might sound cheesy, and it probably is a little cheesy, but like authenticity is the new presence, right? It's not about behaving like a cookie cutter leader. It's about showing up as a human being with all the best parts of you. And that's really when you're acting like a leader, when you can sit at that leadership table and be willing to be seen as who you are and allow the best parts of you to be seen, and also to admit vulnerability when it's there, to admit when you don't know something, to admit when you have changed your mind because of new information, mm-hmm. To admit when it's tense or hard or uncomfortable, right? I think as a leader, we give our team's permission to be human, and it allows them to be more successful when we are human. And so I work hard with the folks that I work with to have them have their whole selves show up at work, right? Like, I, in a perfect world, my goal as a leader is if you met me in a coffee shop or at a dinner party or in the boardroom, I'd be the same person more or less, right? I want to be myself. I don't want to have to remember, you know, to take on and off a work mask and a home mask. And so that's really, for me, what leadership presence is all about, is being able to show up truly as yourself, be humble, be vulnerable, be confident in the value that you bring in and that you deliver, and then empower the people around you to do the same.
And so it kind of all leads to that picture that you're painting of leadership presence by understanding who you are.
Yeah. And look, am I out here saying that in order to grow as a leader, you don't have to change? Absolutely not, right? I mean, you need to evolve. You need to grow. You need to add new skills to your tool belt. You need to practice having difficult conversations, practice naming discomfort, practice being, it's as dumb as it sounds, practice being human in the workplace, right? If you haven't been doing that, if you haven't been connected to your humanity, getting reconnected, it's a muscle, right?
Absolutely.
Dropping that mask is a muscle, and it requires practice. It requires growth. And I think that's what you know, when I look around at leaders who are doing a really amazing job and running really effective teams, that's what I see, is people who are continually willing to improve themselves, but confident that they are okay as they are today.
Yeah. And I think this is kind of a sign of the times in some regard. I mean, I've come across this talking with some other folks on the podcast and just general conversations that I've been having, where, you know, the younger generation as it has been rising, there's been a rise in value of servant leadership and, you know, authenticity and some of these other hot topics. And at the other end of the spectrum is still a fair bit of the center of control still rests with members of the older generation, and some of the values are still kind of in flux. And it's not to say that everyone in that generation and everyone in that generation are, you know, they all think the same way. I mean, some people think, you know, like an older person and they're young, and the younger older person thinks like they're young. But, you know, generally speaking, it's like this. I grew up by the ocean, and you watch the ocean where sometimes a wave is hit the shore, but then that under, like the fallback from the water, and it creates a wave kind of going out, and there's this wave coming in, and there's this collision point where these two waves come together, and kind of there's this little bit of kind of an eruption almost. And so I think that that's some regard what we're seeing in terms of the rise in these values, and you know, talking about value and leadership and servant leadership and authenticity and stuff like that, which is really cool. But it's also kind of creating this tension point.
For sure. And I think this is just my personal opinion, and I love the way you described it, and I hadn't really given a lot of thought to describing it that way or to viewing it that way. But my feeling is that tension gets resolved by being human, by making a human connection, right? By remembering that every leader, this is something my mom used to tell me, ironic because she grew up in the time where women wore skirts to work and men wore pants, but she used to say every leader puts their pants on one leg at a time. Like, we're all the same fundamentally, we're all human. So How do we connect on that human level and then kind of really value each other for what we bring to the table? And I think those differences in leadership can often vary based on how you grew up. And I don't mean that in a familial sense. I mean that in a professional sense. Like, what kind of leadership system did you grow up in, or have you witnessed? Because you get young leaders coming out of very traditional leadership systems with very traditional values and ideas. And I don't mean traditional in like a societal sense. I mean traditional in the leadership sense, like that comparison, you know, that first wave that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So a lot of your social posts talk about the words, I am. Mm-hmm. What is so important about this phrase for leaders?
I think just generally for people, claiming your identity is important. And the words I am are the most direct way we claim, like, the essence of who we are. And it might be a little over the top, but I noticed in my own life that I really try not to say things like, I am busy, I am overwhelmed, I am not those things. I'm feeling those things, but they are not me. They are not my identity. And so really being clean and clear on who you are, and then when how you're feeling or how you're behaving isn't in line with that, you can see it, know it, and correct it more easily. So it really, I mean, the reason I'm so keen on those words is the same, you know, it goes back to that whole fundamental idea of to develop as a person, let alone a leader, you need to understand yourself. And I am is critical to understanding and claiming who you are.
Right. And I think like a lot of what we're talking about here is in understanding yourself and what makes you a leader or qualified to lead or whatever. And I mean, a lot of people, like you were saying, like struggle with, oh, I'm a new leader and I'm not good enough. So how can you help people who are struggling with the idea that they're not a good enough leader or what have you?
So, I mean, there's a couple of things that I do early on with clients who are struggling with this, but the first thing, and this is not my idea, so I can't take credit for it, and I couldn't even tell you what book I read it in, but it's not original. That's all I'm going to say, is to build your own success stack. So really start by identifying factually, like, you know, and maybe this goes back, maybe this resonated with me a little bit because I think back to my litigator days, but like, what are the facts around why I might be a good leader? What have I accomplished? What have I achieved? What have I done? What success have I had that nobody could argue with, that I could literally take into a court of law and prove, right? Like I led a team of 10 people and we got a good result. That happened. I, you know, got promoted to this job by these people. That happened, right? And so then you start to build this success stack where you realize, oh, well, I may not feel good enough, but somebody thinks I'm good enough because I'm here, right? And I was given this opportunity. And oh, and by the way, I did these other 12, 13, 20, 50, depending on the day and the person, things, right? So that can be a really helpful starting point to kind of reframe what's fact and what's story about that feeling of not good enough. And then the other thing, and this came from a coach that I worked with, is really, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about having a daily gratitude practice, and I'm here for it. I think being grateful is awesome. I think gratitude is a powerful emotion, and I think expressing gratitude whenever, wherever, and however we can is awesome. Now, the coach I worked with added a twist to that. So he had us do a daily gratitude and a daily brag. And that, if you are trend towards the not good enough, takes practice. And I say that based on personal experience. I am really good at saying like, yeah, man, I got through the day, or yeah, I'm super excited. I just signed, you know, a handful of clients, or yeah, I just finished working with this client and they had a great result. But to brag on a daily basis about some success you've had, something you're feeling good about accomplishing, was a mindset shift for me in a big, big way. Because we really do, I don't care, you know, at what level you're leading, whether you're the leader of a leader in your family or a leader in your office with a title or without, every day you're doing something worth bragging about, worth recognizing. And so really taking the time to do that can be a powerful, powerful step to overcoming that not good enough feeling. And then the last thing I would say is, I think you can rest assured that 99.9% of the Earth's population walks around feeling like in some way they aren't good enough. If that is the case, we are all wrong. And so we should just do the thing anyway, even if it feels scary and hard.
Well, that's cool. It kind of answers the question I was going to ask you next. What would you say to people that might be hanging back from taking on a leadership role?
I think I've just said the thing that I would really say, but I guess what I would add to that is I would encourage them to think about what it is that's holding them back. There's lots of reasons not to take a leadership role that are absolutely valid, right? And I don't mean that I think they're valid, but what I mean is it's if there's a reason that is simply fear-based that's holding you back, do it anyway. If there's something more concrete that's holding you back, hire a coach and figure out whether you should do it anyway.
Fair enough. So as we start to wrap things up here, Becky, tell us what one thing is that you know about life or leadership that you wish everyone knew.
I mean, I think I don't want to repeat myself, but I really think I wish everyone knew. I wish I had figured out years ago that 99.9% of the population was walking around feeling not good enough, because maybe I would have gotten over myself sooner. But when you start to realize that really talented, amazing people who you look up to feel that way, you realize that this is just nonsense. It's absolute nonsense.
So when it's all said and done, what three words do you want to be used to describe your life?
Joyful, service, and connection.
Cool. I like those words. What does that mean to you?
Well, joyful, as you can tell, is a big one, right? It's like my personal mission. And joyful actually has built into it this idea of being willing to engage with life in a way that we feel all the feelings. Because without the other feelings that aren't so fun, there is no joy. Service means really spending my time in a way that makes the world better, because I'm helping people live better lives. And then connection is just about not losing sight of the fact that humans are not meant to be isolated or in isolation. We're meant to be together and support each other, even if it's by video during the time of COVID.
Absolutely. Thank goodness for video.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Becky. Really good conversation, and enjoy your answers. I know you've got a book coming out and some great social stuff out there. Why don't you tell us where people can connect with you?
Of course. So as I said, a big part of the work that I do is with leaders and people generally, helping them figure out what matters to them so they can do more of that and less of the rest. And so I do have a book coming out, but in the meantime, if you're eager to hear more about the work that I do, you can head over to my website, and I've got a mini class that I sort of introduced the concepts in my book. It's called Unlocking Happiness. And you can get free access to that course at my website, which is www.grantleycoaching.com. That's grantleycoaching.com/podcasts. And that's where you'll find that information. And if you want to connect with me personally, you can find me on LinkedIn or on Instagram at the.butterfly.society.
Amazing. Well, we'll make sure those links are in the show notes. So if you're looking for those links, head over to rashadoberlander.com and you'll find the detailed show notes there. And in the meantime, Becky, it's been a privilege and an honor. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And I look forward to talking to you with you again soon.
Yeah, thank you. This was great. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, would you head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, leave me a rating, leave me a review, and share this with a friend? It spreads the word and helps the podcast grow. You can also find me on social media at R.E. Oberlander. Until next time, stay awesome.